Going to spend the next 45 minutes or so talking with you about how we in Wisconsin are going to be helping to shape the energy future of our country. The University of Wisconsin, some smart people put their heads together and put a grant together with the Department of Energy, and we were at the University of Wisconsin awarded $125 million over a five-year period to establish the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. And our guest to talk about it, Molly John, Dean of the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at the UW-Madison. Dean John, welcome.
Thank you very much, Larry. Great to be here.
And Tim Donahue, our guest as well. Tim is a UW-Madison professor of bacteriology and the director of the Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative. Certainly, if you have questions as we talk with them today about this center and about alternative fuels and bioenergy, I hope you'll join in. Here's the number to call. It's 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. Dean John, that's quite a coup, $125 million.
It is a very significant addition to our resources for research in this area, and I think a reflection of the outstanding science and outstanding set of partnerships that we brought into the competition.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Tim Donahue, you're directing this project, correct?
That's correct. It's been a lot of fun so far.
Can you give us the scope of this project? Of kind of really, what are we trying to accomplish with a bioenergy research center?
I think we're really trying to change how society generates a significant fraction of its energy. Not all of it, but a significant fraction. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to develop technologies that allow us to decrease our dependence on fossil fuels and diversify where we get our fuels, whether it's ethanol or other compounds that we put in our gas tank, or whether it's how we're generating electricity or to manage farms, to heat our houses, to sustain communities and make industries more green or more sustainable. And it's going to be a set of strategies out of this center that are based on plant biomass. So the part of plant material that we currently do not use for food, for people or for animals, or for processing into fuels today. So it's developing new technology.
And I suppose refining too, Dean John, the technologies that we're working on now, for example, with corn as an energy fuel source.
That's right. But we know that the focus on corn is in the present, and in the future we'll be shifting the focus off corn. In 2007, farmers planted corn on more than 90 million acres of U.S. soil, 12 million more acres than 2006, making this one of the biggest shifts in cropping since World War II. And we know that with those kinds of shifts in supply, we can expect big shifts in markets and impacts on food and other prices. So we're looking forward to the development of technologies that allow us to, as Tim said, diversify
right.
the sources of our energy and access that energy from materials produced right here in the state of Wisconsin and in the Midwest.
We have some callers online. We'll give our callers a chance to join in. Again, the number is 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. We just lost our caller there. So I want to go back and ask about corn anyway, because just not to spend all of our time on it, but it certainly made a difference to him in the corn prices this the last year or two with the emphasis on corn as a fuel source.
Yes, it has. And I think as more corn is used to generate ethanol, you're going to see a bit of a roller coaster ride in corn prices. In some areas that's a good thing. In some areas that instability isn't a good thing. I think I'm not an economist, but I've heard people who are more expert in this talk about this issue, and some amount of that increase is due to the fact that more corn is being put into the fuel market, but there are also, you know, other components that are changing the price of corn that are independent of how much ethanol is being generated from corn.
Well, aside from corn, well, you know what? I'm going to back up for a minute because I said the grant goes to the University of Wisconsin, which it certainly does, but there are several partners here. This is not only the UW-Madison that's involved in this, Dean John.
That's correct. We have a major partnership with Michigan State University, which brought forward a set of very complementary scientific expertise with respect to plant biomass and the technologies that we'll use to source energy from it. But we do have a number of other partners as well, including some Department of Energy labs mm-hmm. and other universities that are bringing key technologies forward, mm-hmm. Or individual scientists with expertise that was necessary to put the whole package together. One of the things that distinguished our proposal from all the others is that we brought forward a focus on sustainability in addition to the technological innovations as an integral part of the grant. And so we really have brought together a very diverse group of scientists focused on bringing us into an energy economy that is efficient and sustainable. And as Tim said, reduces our dependence on fossil fuels, which is a key source of instability.
Absolutely. What are some of the other plant sources that where we might draw our energy from?
So really the radical change in technology that's going to come out of the center is the ability to use the cellulosic part of plants. And in the corn game today, we currently use the kernels. In the future, in corn, we want to not use the kernels, but use the cobs and the stalks or the mm-hmm. stover that's currently not used in the bioenergy pipeline today. If we or when we are successful in developing the technology to get at the cellulose part of the plant, we should be able to apply that same technology to getting energy from the cellulose part of grasses, which are perennials, low maintenance, and actually are much more sustainable in the long run, and also from woody material in the Great Lakes Basin area, our forest, which are currently underutilized in the energy game because we cannot get at the cellulose.
And obviously, as you say, Wisconsin is the amount of forest land we have and the timber production that we have, Dean John, is phenomenal.
Well,
could
that's
be
right.
Great source.
We're the number one paper state in the U.S. And so not only do we have the forestry resources, but we have a lot of the infrastructure necessary to harvest that material and bring it to plants that currently create pulp for paper. But some of those same processes will certainly be relevant for the use of that woody material for energy. In fact, we are one of the leaders already in using wood for energy. But as Tim mentioned, in addition to crops we're familiar with, we'll see and forestry, we'll see a focus on perennial grasses, we'll see a focus on agricultural residues of other types, we'll see a focus on domestic waste and waste from animal agriculture. So we do expect this to again bring a much wider array of biological materials into the energy picture.
Well, lots of people to visit with you, so let's go to the phones. Elisa in Milwaukee, we'll go to you first. Hi, Elisa. Thanks for calling.
Hi. My question is on the issue of corn. I have heard that in order to process the corn into fuel, that it takes large amounts of fossil fuels. And I was wondering if the people there agree with that or not, or if that's true.
That is true. And depending on whose numbers you believe, it's at best a marginally energy useful process. And so part of our charge to deal with this scientifically is to try to increase the efficiency by which we can make ethanol and hope to make the energy balance more positive. The other part of our charge is to actually think about getting away from ethanol. without getting into a chemistry lecture, there are chemical properties of ethanol that make it very energy costly to purify it and have it be used as a fuel additive. If we can shift the technology away from ethanol and generate other chemicals that can be added to fuel from plant biomass, the energy efficiency equation will change radically to be in the positive, in the way that we would like to have it be for society.
Just to give you a number, Alyssa, then, and as Tim mentioned, there are a range of them, but a common figure is that corn-based ethanol yields about 50% more energy than is required to make it. So while it is a positive energetically positive process, it's not nearly as efficient as future innovations will make that process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Alyssa, for calling. John in Park Falls, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Thank you for the conversation, and thank you for your guests.
Sure.
I just wanted to bring up the issue of the Flambeau Rivers paper mill in Park Falls, which is an old mill that's been here for many years, and it closed down, as a matter of fact, 2 years ago, and it's now reopened, and it's now virtually energy self-sufficient, creating its own power using biomass, and it's starting to create cellulosic ethanol as a byproduct of the paper production. This is meaning an enormous economic boom for the Park Falls region, and also I hope provides a model for other small paper mills around the state.
Well, we're very proud to claim that biorefinery as a full-fledged partner in the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center.
I thought it probably was.
Oh,
yeah, and they are on the cutting edge of developing things that we want to see more of in the future, and that's a large part of why we were so happy to have this partnership with Flambeau River that went in with the grant and an arrangement that as we bring technologies to the table, they are willing to provide us with access to their pipeline to test things that are going to come out of the laboratories in Madison and in other sites in a real production and industrial environment. And I think that's a critical part of what we need to do.
I agree, and I also think that it means a great deal, as I said, to the economic background of this part of the state and the nation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Brad in Avoca, we'll go to you next. Hi, Brad.
Hi. I'm referencing the caller that called earlier about the efficiency of turning corn into ethanol.
Yeah.
And I'm a dairy farmer, and one of the feeds we use is the byproduct of ethanol, distiller's grains. And what I'm wondering is, when they make these calculations of whether it's energy efficient or not, whether they bring into the equation that there is the valuable feed byproduct left over. And I'm really neither pro or con against ethanol. I'm just wondering.
Okay.
Well, I can tell you that actually these are probably the simplest kinds of numbers. In other words, they don't take into account some of the very valuable co-products of ethanol generation, distiller's grain being one that, as you represent, our dairy industry is very, very interested in and has other uses as well. One of the ways we're thinking about energy, it really represents considering the integrated package. So these processes typically generate energy and other co-products. And when as we get more sophisticated looking at the range of materials, you'll see us bringing forward better analyses about the economic value of some of these auxiliary products that in their own right are valuable.
Brad, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate your call very much. Talking today with Molly John, Dean of the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison, and Tim Donahue, who is a professor of bacteriology and directs the Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about alternative fuel sources and shaping the energy future of our country today with our two guests, Molly John, Dean of the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Tim Donahue, who's a UW-Madison professor of bacteriology and directs the Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative. Exciting times for us here in the state with $125 million to establish this Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. That's over a 5-year period. and talking with them. And certainly, if you want to join in, you are most welcome. The number is 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And let's go to Gary in Black Creek, who's been patiently waiting. Gary, hi. Thank you for waiting.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I garden and use biomass in the form of compost to, you know, to help increase the soil fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious, if we start using a lot of biomass for energy sources, does that mean that there's going to be less biomass to be returned to the soil, and would that have negative consequences for the fertilities of our farmland soil and also for the soils in our forest lands? And I'll take any comments off the air.
All right. Tim Donahue?
So I would say from the science perspective, we want to avoid everything that you just talked about. And that's exactly why when this proposal went in to fund this center, we were one of the few proposals that was a finalist that had a specific component to look at the sustainability of agricultural practices as we begin to shift how we're using biomass. To go back to your specific question about your compost heap in the backyard, I would like to paint a picture for you that in 10 or 15 years, in addition to doing what you currently do with that compost heap, we would be able to seed that compost heap with microorganisms that would actually generate electricity for you that you could store in a battery in the basement of your house, or produce other energy compounds that would allow your home utility bill to go down. So that's the kind of thing that we're looking to do out of this center.
And that's really some of the research that's going to be done then.
Well, absolutely. And as Tim has mentioned, we're also going to be focusing on biomass that really is characterized as excess biomass. And just to give you an idea of a category of excess biomass that's on a lot of people's minds right now, that's what results in forest fires. And so, in fact, the excess biomass created by our nation's forests may itself be one of the most important sources of fuel in the future. Currently, nature has a way of managing that excess biomass that costs us billions of dollars as a nation to control in terms of managing forest fires.
Good points. Lynn in Burlington, your turn. Hi, Lynn. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I had a very similar question to the prior caller. I wondered how they would be harvesting the biomass, if they've included the fuel that it takes to take that kind of harvest off the fields in their statistics, or if that's an entirely different figure.
I think as we look at the energy balance of any existing and new technologies that we want to roll out, you have to include the fuel that it takes to make the fertilizer that goes into the ground. You have to include the fuel that it's going to take to harvest the material on the ground and bring it to a processing site. So again, coming back to where we want to be in the future, we would like to have a future where we have lower energy input practices, and perennials are one of the very attractive things for doing that, as well as forestry. And we would like to have processing activities that are local, coming back to the caller about Flambeau, doing things in local so that you don't have to put it on a truck or put it on a rail and bring it to one of four places in the United States as a way of decreasing the energy input into the practices.
Yeah. Thanks, Lynn, for calling. Tom in Sheboygan, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Good afternoon, Larry.
Good afternoon.
I had one, but I now have two comments.
Okay.
The gentleman that asked about biomass for the composter, I lived on a cooperative farm, and we had planned on making methane gas from our waste from our animals. And it was a win-win proposition where we drew off the gas, then we used the slurry that was left as a perfectly good fertilizer. So what little I knew of that, it worked very well.
We are still the number one state for anaerobic digesters on our dairy farms, and you're absolutely right. It's a very, very exciting development for our dairy industry because of the benefits of the energy itself, but also, as you mentioned, that material that's left over is used as bedding. It's used as fertilizer, and in fact, if a farmer desired, it could be packaged and used as a peat moss substitute, which really does increase the value of the activity.
The third wind being it draws off some of the greenhouse gas that we're worried about. What I wanted to call about is I'm an investor with the Calvert Group mutual funds.
Yeah.
And they're a socially conscious mutual fund. They just started three new funds, and one is called the Global Alternative Energy Funds. If there's anybody out there looking for capitalizing a company, if I could just read a little bit of this, invests in companies that are significantly involved in renewable energy sources and conservation technologies, including alternative energy subsectors such as solar, wind, geothermal, biofuel, ocean and hydro plant, as well as fuel cells and conservation efficiency technologies.
Mm-hmm. Dean John, comment?
Well, actually, one of the benefits that we'll see, I think, of this this award here at UW are the opportunities for investment. And as Tim mentioned, many of those opportunities will be local here in the Midwest, and they'll take many forms. They may be the plants that generate the energy, but we expect there will be considerable intellectual property that may be licensed by manufacturers in the area.
Mm-hmm.
We have the nation's leading small engine sector right mm-hmm. here in Wisconsin. And with our partner Michigan, you add automotive and large engines. So we see tremendous opportunity in this region for economic development far beyond just the generation of the biomass and the energy itself.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give some others a chance to get on here. Greg and Ladysmith, your turn. Greg, hi.
Yes, sir. I was wondering if your guests knew anything about Dr. George Olof in USC. He's a Nobel laureate who apparently, along with his team, has designed a fuel cell that can produce methanol using carbon dioxide as an agent. Him and his team claim that they ran the calculations and that they're able to produce methanol at about $1 a gallon. And his proposition is that methanol could be used as a means of transferring energy to the market.
Hmm. Tim Donahue?
I'll have to say I haven't seen those studies. There's a large amount of fuel cell work going on campus as well. And actually, that's something that my lab is actively exploring with Dan Nagira in the College of Engineering, where we're actually taking sunlight and renewable resources and using photosynthetic microbes and generating electricity directly out of them because they produce hydrogen as an intermediate, and then we oxidize that hydrogen. So it may sound like I'm a snake oil salesman with a truck, but with your waste and sunlight, we can generate electricity for you. And we're very excited about that. And the DOE has actually just provided us with funding on top of the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center to explore that opportunity.
Wow.
And bring it to the market.
Wonderful. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate the call. Bob in Marquette, Michigan, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I'm curious about carbon neutrality. Is that considered in this research? And Larry, I'm a huge fan.
Oh, thanks, Bob.
I'm so glad you asked that question, because we've already talked about the way these technologies are evaluated with respect to their energy efficiency. But we also absolutely do evaluate the impacts of these technologies with respect to their effects on greenhouse gases. So we know that even the biofuels we have commonly available now, ethanol and biodiesel, have lower emissions of greenhouse gases than petroleum gasoline. But we expect that some of these alternative fuels that Tim has alluded to may be even more favorable in terms of greenhouse gas emission. And in fact, when we move away from a dependence on fossil fuel, we're improving the whole cycling of carbon drastically. We have a partner here at the UW who has specialized in climate change and in particular on the cycling of elements such as carbon and nutrients that may be affected by these shifts in our energy economy, and they are very much an integral part of our efforts in the Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative. Mm.
So one other comment that I think is really germane to your excellent question, and that is that as we roll out new technologies in the future, we will possibly be making CO2 as one part of making these other fuels. And yes, we are very, very concerned, and the DOE is very concerned about being as carbon neutral as possible. And so that's why actually if you look at what we proposed in the grant, we have specific experiments to take the CO2 that's going to come off of fermentations where we're making other fuels and allow other classes of microbes in a second stage to fix that CO2 and not release it into the atmosphere, but to fix it and to convert it into other high-value chemicals that are part of a commodity market. If we fail to do that, we will be replacing one problem with another one, and that's not where we want to go.
Excellent.
Thank you. University of Wisconsin rules.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Thanks very much for calling. And by the way, we should mention the website. There's, Dijon, there's a Wisconsin, what is it, WisconsinBioenergy.com, correct?
Yep. It's www.WisconsinBioenergy, all one word, .com. And that describes the activities in this area, not only at UW-Madison, but throughout the UW system. We have faculty and activities all across the state that are involved. Again, speaking to that point about the fact that these economies are likely to be quite decentralized. We have some UW campuses that have pledged to go off the grid with utility partners in some cases. So there's a lot of activity that you can see summarized there. And very soon, you'll be able to link to the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center site off of the Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative.
So it's WisconsinBioenergy.com. All right. Let's go to Bruce in White Bear Lake. Bruce, hello to you. That's in Minnesota, I believe. Hi, Bruce.
Hello, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering if your guests might have any input on the turkey manure burning plants that produce the energy that are going up in Minnesota. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Tim Donahue, are you familiar with that at all?
I'm not familiar with those specific plants, but there is a large potential to diversify energy sources by burning material. If you look back in the history of this planet and society, that's how we got a lot of our heat and energy out of that. There are similar plants for manure processing with other species around the Great Lakes Basin. And I think those are all part of the technologies that need to be thought about in diversifying how we're sourcing our energy.
Yeah. That's right. And, of course, that cuts two ways. Both there's energy generation, but it also allows us to manage what otherwise would be a waste problem.
Yeah.
And so we're increasingly seeing these closed cycle opportunities where we're both creating environmental benefit as well as creating energy.
Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate it very much. And Bob in Waupaca, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got two quick things to say. One, in Los Angeles, their sewage treatment plants are producing methane to run all city vehicles within that area. So they go there for refilling, and they've been doing that for years. Number two, why aren't they taking our two biggest problems that we have, sewage and rottable garbage, putting them together? The byproduct is fertilizer. You've got methane coming off of that, and you can run any car on methane. You can run your heat in your house on methane. Any town, of a size of 6,000 to 8,000, using their garbage and their sewage and mixing it together can create enough methane to fuel the whole town. And I never hear anything said about that. And those are two big problems. What are we going to do with sewage? Look at Milwaukee. They dump it in Lake Michigan. You know, something's got to be done, and those are two things that we have a lot of.
Well, let's go to Tim Donahue for a comment. Tim?
So I agree with you 100%. From what I've been told, in Madison, the Madison City water treatment plants generate 40% of their own electricity to run those plants. We don't use it. We don't use the methane to fuel the cars for the city fleet, but we use it to run 40% of the power that runs the plants. I think those types of activities need to be expanded as we go down the road to, as Molly said, close the loop and make all industries, whether it's cheese processing plants, farm operations, cities and towns, more closed loop systems. We have the ability to do that. We have the ability to take more of our organic waste, and whether it's in my backyard in a compost heap, whether it's in a food processing or dairy processing operation in the state, to bring technology to them to make them more energy neutral and less consumers of the grid and possibly even contributors to the grid. And I think that's where we need to go as a society.
Yeah.
And Europe is actually way ahead of us in some places, so we certainly keep an eye on success stories from Europe, which often are occur on a smaller scale and are focused on some of the sources you've mentioned.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it. Stephen Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for the program.
Sure.
I was just calling to ask about ethanol. I'm a supporter of the ethanol, but I'm wondering, isn't it cheaper to make it out of sugar? And why don't we do that in this country? I hear there are, you know, home gardeners and stuff growing sugarcane in Green Bay. You know, it seems like you could grow it all over the place if it costs less, if you make more ethanol out of sugar, and if you can import sugar so cheaply, as I've heard, you know, that can be done. Why aren't we doing that?
Well, that's actually precisely what we are doing. The ethanol that's being made now, by and large, if to go into our gas tank, is coming from the corn kernels, the simple sugars that we can get out of that. It's an issue of scale. Various governors and the president have put forth the proposal that we should be putting gasoline in our cars that have up to 30% ethanol or more. In order to do that, we need to process a billion tons of biomass a year. We cannot grow that amount of sugarcane in Green Bay or
anywhere
or on marginal lands anywhere around the United States. So in order to get at that amount of biomass, we need to generate new technologies to get at the cellulose, the sugar that's trapped in cellulose. If we were to take that all from corn kernels, we would have enormous animal and human food problems as a society. We would be using marginal land that will not support agriculture long term. So that's why the scale of the process is what forces us to go to other sources of that sugar. And that's why the only thing that's available, the major thing that's available right now, is the cellulosic sugar polymers that need to be degraded into smaller molecules.
No. Thank you very much, Steve, for calling. Mike in New Auburn, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Faye. Thank you for the program. My question is, last year either Gene Farrakh or someone had two guests from the State University of New York in Syracuse who talked about trees and the ratio energy in, energy out. And they were throwing around, compared to corn, they were throwing around figures like five times as much energy out of cellulose products than from trees than from the cost of making it out of corn. The story was that a graduate student discovered that the effluent from paper mills had a whole lot of these products that could be converted. Do you know anything about that, and how accurate is that business of 5 to 10 times the erg-out business?
So really what you're getting at is what we in the field call the energy density of materials. How much energy could you get out of an acre or out of so much weight of material? And what you have said is, I don't know about the actual numbers, but in general, what you have said is absolutely correct. Cellulose is more energy dense than the sugar that's in a corn kernel. And that material is there but the technology to use it is what's lacking. We know how to make ethanol from sugar. We've been making wine and beer as societies for a long time. We need to convert the cellulose into simple sugars before we can make energy from it. And that's really the technological gap that we need, one of the technological gaps that we need to fill.
And that's what, and that's part of your work in the
That's correct.
The bioenergy, the new initiative in the research center.
That's correct.
Yeah. And we think some of the critical breakthroughs will be in the area of wood-sourced material. That's a place where we know, if you just look across the U.S., we generate 400 million tons of excess forestry biomass a year, 400 million tons of bone-dry wood, excess out of our forests that aren't used, which is a tremendous source of energy in addition to the byproducts of the paper and pulping industry.
Hmm. You know what? I'm sorry, you're breaking up, and I wish we could go on there, Mike. But I guess you can know that part of the research that's going to be going on at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center will definitely be aimed at those wood products. Now, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's go back. I want to go back to the just for a second here because we're close to finishing. What's the website again, Molly? And what
the website where you can learn more about efforts in the area of bioenergy throughout the UW system is www.wisconsinbioenergy.com. And on that website, you'll see a whole range of different kinds of contributions, faculty from across the system and efforts from across the system. And I want to put in a plug for one of our partners, the Forest Products Lab, right here on the Madison campus. That's a federal lab with the U.S. Forest Service that has done lots of pioneering work in this area and has been a great partner as we've moved this forward.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. We'll have to do this again. Appreciate it very much. Thank you. And we'll look forward to another visit.
Thank you, Larry. I'd love to come back and tell you about what we've gotten done in the future.
That's right. Thank you very much.
Molly John, Dean of the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. Tim Donahue, UW-Madison Professor of Bacteriology. Take a look at that website, wisconsinbioenergy.com. Phil Pelletieri coming up tomorrow to talk bugs with us. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.